I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Gingras, Thompson, and Walks, also Operating Engineers Local 139 and Madison Computer Works. John Nichols, Associate Editor of the Capital Times and writer for The Nation, joins us. All right, the Chicken Little, Chuck Todd and his Chicken Little band of, the Democrats making a mistake with impeachment, Marquette Paul, run for the hills. It's happening. It's happening. The knees are a shaking, John.
Oh, of course they are. You know, and look, D.C. insider folks are always scared of everything, right? And I happen to think Chuck Todd's better than a lot of them, and actually has said some pretty strong, pretty savvy things.
Yeah, but his whole M.O. every day on MTP Daily and everything is, what if the Democrats do this, or what if they... And in the meantime, the Republicans are getting away with protecting a lawless president and completely ignoring reality, and nobody even talks about them.
Creating stuff out of thin air.
Right.
You know, the Ukraine threat. And you were, you know, didn't you grow up, Sly, afraid of Ukraine?
Well, you know, considering I'm a member of a Ukrainian Catholic church, I would say no.
No, but I mean, as a kid.
As a kid? Oh, yeah.
Ukraine threat. You know?
I think kind of the Tucker Carlson ridiculously said the other day, well, what's the difference between Ukraine and Russia? Who cares? Well, maybe he kind of forgot about the Budapest Agreement where they gave up their nukes for protection. Does he read?
I'll give you another difference. You want to know a difference?
You didn't answer my question. Does he read?
No. Not enough.
You know, that was a big deal.
Of course it was a big deal. So, frankly, if you're Ukraine, your experience with your Russian neighbor has not been a particularly good one. You know what I mean? I would argue disproportionality there.
Hello? Hello? Yeah, no, I'm saying hello, like, yes.
I mean, it's just, and to make these comparisons, to say, oh, yeah, Ukraine was doing... Ukraine wasn't threatening the United States. It certainly wasn't meddling in our election. They had other problems at the time,
well,
if you'll recall.
What the Republicans are what the Republicans are cynically conflating is, yes, there were some Ukrainian leaders who voiced support for Hillary Clinton out of survival. They weren't.
Because they thought she was going to win.
Well, but they also, yeah, but she took a more aggressive stand in supporting them than Barack Obama, who was very tepid in giving them the military support that they needed. Let's face it, the Obama administration probably made some mistakes early on with Ukraine, although I know you're not a big fan of giving countries arms. I would
say, I'm less of an interventionist there. But yeah,
although in this situation, I would say, considering we promised to protect them, at least helping them protect themselves, when they're being invaded.
Well, I mean, they were otherwise occupied.
Right.
But no, I would say it's a slightly different variation, though, just on what you're saying here, which I think, you know, it's interesting that our Republican friends are very, very concerned that, you know, some Ukrainians meddled, quote unquote, in U.S. election by, like, writing an op-ed.
I know.
Okay.
Right. Well, you know what?
With all due respect.
You know, here's the dishonesty of this whole notion of, oh, Barack Obama was, excuse me, Donald Trump was concerned about corruption. Neil Katyal said this last night on MSNBC. He said, it doesn't make any sense. If he was concerned about Ukraine being corrupt, why did he ask them to investigate the Bidens and go back and take a look at the server situation with the DNC? If he thought they were so corrupt, why would he ask them to investigate his enemies? And why would Republicans overwhelmingly vote to support the military aid and the financial assistance? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't, but Sly, actually, I just want to say, in the Trump universe, you kind of made just a dumb argument there. If Ukraine was so corrupt, why would Trump be dealing with them? Think about that question.
Well,
Donald Trump
loves corruption.
Oh, these guys are a bunch of crooks. Here, get them on the phone.
Well, okay, but that's the reality versus point. What I'm shooting down is their rhetorical argument here.
Well, their rhetorical argument is absurd, but also so too is the argument about people meddling in elections and stuff like that. What these Ukrainians did, what they stand accused of doing, is very comparable to, although less extreme, to what Donald Trump just did in the Israeli election.
Right. Let's be honest. What Barack Obama did in the Canadian election, even though he doesn't hold office anymore, he endorsed Justin Trudeau,
clearly. Yeah, and it probably had an impact. And
it absolutely had an impact.
Bill Clinton and Tony Blair, Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. I mean, you don't think that this country has these presidents of this country have had preferences? And made that quite clear in all kinds of ways. You usually know who major players would prefer to see elected. And sometimes, if there's any lack of clarity on that, it is made more clear. But
I would say the United States was somewhat helpful to Viktor Yushchenko versus Viktor Yanukovych. Remember the Orange Revolution? I think there was some U.S. involvement there. What do you think?
But McCain was running around. He couldn't get him off the square. It's not like we haven't been, quote-unquote, really helpful in some elections throughout history. Just ask the Australians for a little historical, visit back to the 70s. The thing is, if people in one country say, we think we'd be better off if that person was elected, or even if they don't quite say elected, but they say, we really appreciate what this person is saying, right? I don't think the average American takes it all that seriously. I don't think there's a lot of Americans who are going, well, where's Ukraine on this election? Because that'll help me decide.
Right.
A couple folks, but not a lot. So I don't think it's a big deal. It's a much bigger deal if without transparency, without any sort of public acknowledgement of it, a country or its oligarchs are involved in trying to influence key demographics in key states via social media and troll farms and things like that. I always think when I look at the Mueller report and a lot of the other things that have come out, I always think that's one of the most under-considered parts of this whole thing. And, it's astounding to me that people run around talking about, Ukraine, people wrote an op-ed or something like that. Let's get realistic here. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan were shifted by about 75,000 votes in 2016. They've made the loser of the popular vote the president of the United States. And if you look at those three states, if you look at the Mueller report, what you find is substantial discussion, as well as many other reports and studies, of efforts to influence turnout in a negative way in Milwaukee, Detroit, some of the big cities in Pennsylvania. Also efforts, apparently, to influence rural areas and stuff like that. It's, that's real.
So
that.
Excuse me. How about Russian fun of Russia funneling help to the NRA to help Ron Johnson?
and that great picture of Scott Walker.
All right. Yes, and the great picture. So here's your favorite, David Brooks, talking about impeachment.
I sort of think the Democrats should either fold this up or go big. And folding this up would mean we're going to have we'll impeach him, we'll send it to the Senate, we'll try to get it done as quickly as possible, and then we'll go off to the presidential campaign.
Right.
Going big would say this is not a trial, this is a political process. The jury is in four states in the Midwest. We're going to get local people from those four states to try to explain to the people in those four states why this matters to them and try to shift the poll numbers. So those are the two options. I think they should fold it up because I think political opinion is completely unmovable on this, and they should go on and have a presidential campaign.
You know, Betsy, it is...
Hold it up, John.
What a dip. You know, I mean...
You know, I deliberately put that clip in just to get you angry.
If anybody who actually can muster anger toward David Brooke, you know, doesn't have... You know, they have nothing going on in their life, right, I guess. Because, I mean, the guy, he's not worthy of anger. He's just worthy of why, you know? And on that one, could you even sort of comprehend what he was
no.
saying? No. Go big.
No.
It says, like, you've got to go big. Focus narrowly on four states. You know? I mean, what the hell is he talking about? It's not even, it isn't even a coherent, you know, false choice. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, there you were hearing one of the most dangerous phenomena in this game. And that is the people who sort of identify as conservatives or moderates but feel like, oh, well, my place now is in the Democratic Party, right? And so they've, you know, if not in the Democratic Party, at least their place is to give the Democratic Party advice.
Oh, you're talking about Brett Stevens from the New York Times.
All these people, right? And, you know, and the problem is, A, no, they were so incompetent that the party that they had thrown in with is now, you know, it's been lost to Donald Trump. So now they're coming and saying, you know, we screwed up a you know, historic American political party. Here was some advice on how you can screw up the other one. And so what he's saying about impeachment, though, the core of the problem with it is this. It's not a, you know, fold it or go big thing. They've already gone big, Sly. When you say you're going to do it, you know, I mean, it's not like we're retreating to the middle ground. We're just going to do the articles of impeachment, send them over, and then, you know,
right.
whatever happens, that's cool.
Well, let me play.
They did
go big. Well, here, let me play another swamp creature, Amy Walter from The Cook Report. She's an unusually loathsome person.
Is by the time we're even in the spring or summer of 2020, we're not going to be talking about impeachment at all. And this is the most remarkable thing about this impeachment process is this will be the third time in history a president of the United States will be impeached, and I will bet you it's not an issue at all in the 2020 election. So,
can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. Why is it that the national media is so impatient, won't talk about things that are actually happening and the process of what's happening and why it's happening? They've always got to be jumping ahead 6 months or a year to an election?
Well, because it's an interesting subtlety of elections. Elections are, you know, equivalent to sports, right? You can cover them, you know, and have teams and, you know, like strategies and polls will tell you where things stand in this inning or this quarter. And they know how to do that, right? What they don't know how to do is holding powerful people to account. And they're unbelievably bad at doing it with powerful people in the economy, right? That they're miserable at. And they're frankly very bad at doing it in the zone of politics. And so they like an election because an election is for them like a sporting event. It's a theater. It's something they can talk about, and they've learned, you know, how to do the play-by-play and stuff like that. Impeachment and things like that, I think it actually scares a lot of the D.C. types, because they think that, you know, this thing might be getting kind of real here, right? You know, that this might be kind of serious, and it's not fun anymore if it's serious. People get angry and passionate, and You know, you're talking about really shifting power. And frankly, I think that our friend there is just wrong, fundamentally wrong. I think impeachment will be discussed in the 2020 election. I think if Donald Trump survives impeachment, he will claim he was vindicated. He will make it a major part of what he says. And I think also that the evidence that has come out, the information that is now in play, will be a part of the critique of Donald Trump and something that people weigh in deciding whether to support him or not. I don't think if the Senate does not vote to impeach that, you know, the vast majority of Americans are going to say, oh, I guess there was nothing there. I have so much faith in Marco Rubio that, you know, if he says it's not impeachable, I'm cool with that. I mean, it's a joke. Of course impeachment's going to be. It'll be real because there are real issues there. And the most fundamental of those issues do not involve Ukraine. The most fundamental of those issues involves the corruption of the office of the presidency by somebody who sought to abuse that office with Ukraine to help himself politically for re-election, but also who, with so much evidence, so much overwhelming evidence, has sought to enrich himself and his family via the occupation of the presidency of the United States. And this will come out in this process, and I think it's a part of the election.
Stand by. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SliceOffice.com.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices, but we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
I want to welcome a new sponsor to SliceOffice.com. The attorneys at Gingras, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com.
Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Firefighters Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Teamsters Local 695. All right, you're probably saying to yourself, you know, God, I haven't heard Scott Walker's voice for a while. So here is Scott Walker.
I think in some ways it's parallels what we saw at the recall election here years ago, where the left so overplayed their hand, I think you're seeing that with the impeachment, that independent voters started to look back and say, hey, let's focus on things that actually matter. I think they're in a pickle on this one. I think in the end you're going to start to see some Democrats peel off. But in the end, I think they have to vote to impeach just to satisfy their donor base.
The former governor.
So there you go.
They're in a pickle, or is it a cucumber? I'm not sure. Maybe it's an apple. You know, with all due respect to Scott Walker, can he talk about anything that doesn't involve Scott Walker?
No.
It's a lot like what I went through. Let me tell you a little bit about what I went through. You know, I mean, he's sort of a damaged guy there. The impeachment, if he wants to compare it to the recall, that's fine. That's great. What he should understand, of course, is that in that case, he did prevail. Thanks to massive spending from outside the state, from very, very wealthy people, an overwhelming amount of money. And remember, he was advertising, you know, literally for months and months and months attacking impeachment, or attacking, I apologize, the recall. And it is, you know, this is something that people could put into the mix and say, if Donald Trump and his supporters spend massively to discredit impeachment, theoretically, they could turn it to a political advantage. But here's the one thing that...
Well, they are doing that.
They're trying.
Yeah.
But I think there'll be a counter, and it'll be interesting to see. I don't think...
Well, wouldn't it be nice if Tom Steyer... Wouldn't it be nice if Michael Bloomberg and Tom Steyer ended their vanity projects and took the money they're spending on themselves and maybe spend it on some money to help Representative Cunningham in South Carolina?
They can still do their vanity project and the other thing. It's
right.
Plenty of money left.
Right.
The one thing I want to say, though, is what Scott Walker will never say, because Scott Walker always thinks about himself and he always thinks about, you know, political strategies, is, was the recall right? Was it right to recall him? It was. It was a morally appropriate, politically necessary act. It's sad that it didn't work. I'm sorry it didn't. But have no doubt about it. This guy did not run for governor of Wisconsin saying he was going to do what he did. When he did attack unions, their members, working families in the state, when he gutted funding for public education and public services, he did so in dishonest and disreputable ways, and a million people said they would like to hold him to account for that. That it didn't remove him from office.
You know, it's funny. The media never thought the clip that I sent them of Scott Walker on my show saying I asked him about collective bargaining and how he would treat state workers if he became governor, and he said he'd negotiate with him. But evidently that wasn't a strong enough soundbite to penetrate the media, so they didn't use it. But he said it on my show.
No,
he said it to the newspaper in Appleton.
He said it. Well, he said it in talking. You know, he came in for a Cap Times.
Oh, yeah.
And remember, we were all.
I know. Well, we got along with him, all right. Yeah.
We all got along. At least we talked to him. We had a good dialogue. And what he said there was very disarming and very soft.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't some big anti-labor thing. And the only reason I bring that up is that I find it fascinating that people who try to make a very big deal of their personal morality, right, and you know, what moral, decent people they are, when they get into these core questions about their political circumstance, they don't explore morality, right? And I think that the way that Donald Trump has acted as president of the United States makes, in addition to a practical and political argument for his impeachment, makes a moral argument for his impeachment.
Oh.
I find it shocking that anybody would not vote to impeach him.
All right, listen to this.
I am super thankful that Nancy Pelosi put Adam Schiff in charge of the impeachment process. I don't think it could have gone better for Republicans. First of all, I think he's the least credible congressman in D.C. He was the guy that told us there was collusion hiding in plain sight. Remember that? And there wasn't. He said that there was evidence that would take down Donald Trump as it relates to this impeachment. There hasn't been any proven. He's the least credible guy. Secondly, it turns out the book was much better than the movie on this. The poll numbers for the impeachment was growing when they were having secret depositions down in the basement of the House of Representatives. When they put this on TV, Adam Schiff is sort of a creepy-looking guy. Didn't sort of work out very well for him. And I think it ultimately played to Republicans' benefits. And national polls and state polls have now shown that Donald Trump's numbers have flipped as it relates to impeachment.
That is true. Your response?
Which is not true. I don't know what I do not know what Frederica Freiberg was thinking there. That is not true. That is our friend Bill.
When she said your response, response should be that's not true.
That is our friend Bill McCaution, who we both know and like.
And like.
You're right.
That was a dreadful,
or as you would say, tragic statement.
Tragic thing, but Bill's a spin guy, and you know, and there he was.
That's not spin.
Better than the movie.
That's not spin.
Like
that's
that.
Just
it's
complete intellectual dishonesty. Yeah. He knows better.
Of course, he knows better. But here's the interesting thing, just to throw in the mix for what it's worth. If you really want to talk about polls, right? And Adam Schiff is supposedly such a creepy guy, right?
Well, not everybody can be Devin Nunes or Jim Jordan.
Yeah, I was going to say right off the bat, but just.
Ask the wrestlers. Ask the wrestlers at Ohio State.
Make note of this fact, okay? I'm talking about polling data here.
Sorry.
Stop interrupting me. I'm talking about polling data. Take a look at the CNN poll. The top line, you know, has not moved a lot. I understand that. I respect that. But remember, the top line is that Donald Trump, a majority of people saying Donald Trump should be impeached and removed from office, okay? And that's the difference on that, by the way. It's like a 50-43. There are about 6-7% of people who can't figure the thing out. What that means is, if you translate that into numbers in the United States, that's, you know, millions and millions of people. I mean, roughly, you know, that difference there, you're talking about, you know, in an election, something in the range of 10 million people. That's a huge, it's getting pretty close to a landslide victory for impeachment, by the way, if that 7% that can't figure it out just doesn't vote. And so right off the bat, you've got substantial support for impeachment. I know it's not 70%, 80%. I understand that. But here's the other interesting thing. If you look at the crosstabs in the polling, and this is how I would have responded to Bill in that situation, look at the numbers for women, right?
63% of women?
It's 61, I think. But it depends on which poll you look. But, you know, and it's been going up. It went up from the previous CNN poll 5 points, and it was up 5 points from the poll before that. So, you know, in each CNN poll, you've seen this exponential growth in support for impeachment among women, among African Americans, among, you know, all kinds of demographics. You're seeing real movement. Now, are there some groups that are intractable, you know, conservatives, Republicans? You know, yeah, they're relatively solid. And they're maybe even locking in more. I understand that.
Yeah, but you know how a lot of people are measuring this, though? They're saying, yeah, well, Donald Trump lost the popular vote. We're in no different place than we were when he got elected. And, of course, the only thing that matters is the Electoral College. So the only thing that matters are the polls in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. That's what they're arguing.
You know, but there's the interesting thing as well, right? You know, they look at, there's a lot of talk about the Marquette poll. And the Marquette poll showed it was a good poll for Trump. You know, it was better for Trump than some previous ones have been. But as Charles Franklin will tell you, snapshot, right? It's, you know, another one 2 weeks later could give you a very different picture. And what I think is that at this point, even that good poll for Trump, still, it didn't show him with like some kind of landslide support. And it didn't, by the way, show landslide opposition to impeachment. It showed something close, and I understand that. Here's what I would suggest to you. Polling at this point on impeachment is not the answer. It's not the, you know, you're not going to get clarity at this point. We don't know yet what we're talking about. The House Judiciary Committee is going to get its report, not just from intelligence, but from other committees as well. They will sit down and they will develop articles of impeachment. When you've got articles of impeachment, which specifically spell out what the president did, and people can make a choice on that, my bet is, well, I'd be glad to be, you know, we'll see where it plays out. I understand, could be wrong, but my bet is that that's the point at which you see support for impeachment start to actually move up.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Especially if they focus on obstruction.
This is something I was thinking about this morning. I guess my one concern is that Americans have such a low view of our political system and faith in our leaders that there's sort of a cynicism that's baked into the cake of, yeah, our presidents are generally crooked, and that type of shenanigans and deal maybe probably isn't all that different. Trump's probably not that different than the previous presidents.
Well, I mean, I think that's actually that would be the smartest defense for Trump, right? Point out.
Yeah, but he won't let his minions like Doug Collins of Georgia.
Yeah,
do that.
He doesn't want to lower himself to the comparisons with like Reagan or Eisenhower.
Right.
So it's true.
Don't compare Reagan to poor Eisenhower. Doesn't deserve to be in the same sentence.
I mean,
Ronald Reagan clearly should have been impeached.
Yeah, he totally should have. But what I'm saying is, even I bring Reagan up because even Reagan is unacceptable for Trump. Right. You know what I mean?
Reagan was the only Republican president that beat out Donald Trump, best president of all time. Abraham Lincoln didn't the other day on that poll. So,
well, the fascinating thing is that Donald Trump retweeted that, you know, favorably. But this is, there is an important thing here that look, past presidents have done things that are inappropriate and impeachable. I think you can point out a lot of stuff along the way. I wrote a book about it. But this game of saying that everybody's corrupt, to my mind, is the number one argument for impeachment, right? Because I believe impeachment, you know, it kind of lays a marker down. It says, yeah, you do these things, you could lose your job.
Right. Well, you know, that
presidents hear that.
But that sort of MO, that's sort of Putin's game. It's like, hey, everybody's corrupt. We all do it, so let's just move on. That's kind of his.
And,
that's his MO.
Well, but it's the MO of every authoritarian.
Right.
Right. It's and then the argument is that if you've lowered your standards incredibly low, then you judge, you know, from a space where that figure can seem appealing because he or she supposedly keeps you safe or keeps you in a job or makes the trains run on time or whatever thing, you know, whatever line is run about the authoritarian leader. And the problem with that is it's not aspirational at all. It doesn't say, yeah, we could have a rich and glorious democracy where you have jobs, where the trains run efficiently, where, you know, you have
The old Hitler made the trains run on time argument.
I think it was Mussolini.
Oh, okay.
On that one. Yeah, with all due respect. But what I'm saying is the counter to that is, you know, why wouldn't you want to go up, right? Why don't you want to raise the standard to the highest level?
Okay, well, so let me ask you this. Because Pete Buttigieg is doing very well right now in Iowa and New Hampshire. And David Brooks asked this question the other day. Let me just, here's another Brooks clip.
Since I've started asking, it's like, who's the Jimmy Carter here? Because we're in a moment where we need a moral rinse. And so in 76, that was Jimmy Carter, a completely unlikely presidential candidate running against a lot of qualified senators. And he just seemed like a moral rinse, and he seemed relaxing. I think one of the reasons Warren has suffered is Warren presidency seems kind of exhausting. We have 4 more years of battle. And I think Buttigieg seems he's less of the fighter, more, I can have a normal life again. And so normalcy is a good trait.
All right.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Obviously, from your perspective.
If you're in a bad situation, right, normalcy, you know, like, is just locking stuff in, right? And maybe you take one of the crazy characters out of the room, but you haven't solved the problem.
Well,
I mean,
David Brooks has health care, right? Well, David Brooks has a job. Okay, but, you know, it's hard not to make the argument that Jimmy Carter ran a campaign in 1976 on decency and honesty.
Yeah.
You're right. But you know what he also did that Pete, you know what else he did that Pete Buttigieg has not so far? Is it, and this is one of the reasons I was only 15, but this is one of the reasons I supported Carter. As my aunt and uncle lived in Georgia, and I remember him making advances in that state, even though early in his career he wasn't such an angel, on civil rights. And Jimmy Carter had the endorsement of Daddy King. People forget that.
Look, he was part of a group of breakthrough governors in the South in the early 70s who held out the possibility of a real change. It didn't fully realize. Also, I was just doing research on this for a book I was working on. You look back at the platform that Carter ran on in 76, it was a very progressive platform. I mean, if the next president of the United States is elected on a platform as progressive as what Jimmy Carter and Walter Mondale ran on in 76, that'll be fine. And it won't be everything I want, but it'll be fine. And it'll be way to the left of anything David Brooks wants. And frankly, if I was Pete Buttigieg's opponents, I would carve out that David Brooks thing, and I'd put that on hats. If Pete Buttigieg is simply a return to normalcy, right?
Well, I don't think Buttigieg wants to run on that. He's running on change.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It'd be a negative ad.
Okay. Before we go, let's talk about Michael Bloomberg for just a moment, shall we? I find him to be an unusually loathsome human being. here he is a while, I think this is last year, talking about why we all need to have that big gulp soda tax.
The problem is in people that don't have a lot of money. And so higher taxes should have a bigger impact on their behavior and how they deal with themselves. So I listen to people saying, oh, we don't want to tax the poor. Well, we want the poor to live longer so that they can get an education and enjoy life.
You know, everybody's been talking about turnout in Milwaukee being the key to the 2020 election. There's a message to get people in Milwaukee to turn out, huh? What do you think?
You know, look,
yeah, the big gulp tax.
Bloomberg.
The condescending, patriarchal.
But I like that thing where they got the calories next to your coffee. I think that was something Bloomberg did, right? Didn't he like? Was he like a pioneer on that? That you get, you know, you got to put like the calorie count.
What a disgusting man.
But you know why? You know why he does? I'm sure of it. Like, you know, this is the most egocentric guy. I would argue even potentially more egocentric than Trump, which is amazing. I think Bloomberg, you know, he's thinking, well, I do that. I, you know, watch my calories. I don't drink the big gulp. You know, I mean, he's sort of like, I figured it out. And so I've got answers for everybody. Now, here's the problem with that, Sly. First off, he's a billionaire. And so he thinks he's got things figured out because if something goes wrong, he just throws money at it and makes it right, okay, for him. That's just the truth. If he's, you remember when he used to ride the subway in New York, right? If the subway broke down, what did Mike Bloomberg do?
Got in the limo.
He wasn't. That's right, because he's got that fallback, and then you can, you know, live this very, you know, austere life and do all this stuff like that. The thing you want to do, the answer for actually making people healthier, right, is to A, give them universal Medicare for all health care, and which has a lot of preventative care in it. And yeah, are you going to get people moving toward healthier lifestyles? You betcha. But they're going to choose it. And this is the weirdest thing about when people talk about choice in health care. The one choice a lot of these centrists want to give you is the choice of whether to, you know, tap into a universal health care system, right? Or you could keep your own with your deductibles and all that stuff, right? That's the choice they want. They want the business choice. I want the choice of when you've got guaranteed health care, when you know you're going to be covered, you know you're going to be taken care of, and it's free. And I want to emphasize that word, free for you as an individual. Obviously, you pay your taxes and stuff like that, but it's free at the point of service. You can get, you know, nutrition advice. You can get counsel on how to lose weight, be healthy, do all the things Michael Bloomberg wants you to do. I want that. I want people to make those choices based on information and security.
Yeah, well, let's put something else into the mix here.
Uh-oh.
7 years ago when I lost my job at the age of 51,
huh?
As well as my comrades, okay, there was no choice for me for health care. Yeah, sure. I had some COBRA for a little while, but if I hadn't gotten another job, I wouldn't have had health care. And that was during Obamacare. But if you don't have a job and you don't have health care, you're screwed. I don't understand why Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have not made that argument. I don't understand it. I don't understand why every time I hear about the union workers don't want to give up their health care. I would go to Lordstown, Ohio, and talk to the people who lost their jobs and say, hey, how do you like your union health care? I don't understand why they're not making that argument. To me, it's the biggest missed. But what's wrong with that argument?
It's a great argument. Want to keep it. So let's amplify it. How many? You were thrown into a situation, right? A very difficult situation, which you came through very well, ultimately, because of your friends, because of your comrades, because of your own hard work and reaching out to folks. But here's the interesting thing. What if you had just decided you, at 51, you didn't really like what you were doing and you wanted to do something else?
Right.
You couldn't.
No.
Right? You were limited. And so what I would argue is, yes, universal health care is a safety net. It it does protect you when you don't have a job, when you don't have those protections. But it also is opportunity, and that's where I would argue it. You know, I'd go right at Mike Bloomberg. I'd say, you want to encourage, small business growth, innovation, people doing what they can do and what they love to do. You give them really solid health care. You look at how many people leave lousy jobs and start doing something creative. I see it as, one of the best things you could do for the economy.
By the way, if you get a chance, read the interview that Michael Bloomberg did with, I think it was Public Radio, where he praises China and Xi Jinping. He says he's not a dictator and that the Communist Party in China is responsive to their constituencies. He essentially said China was a democracy.
That's one of the many reasons why Mike Bloomberg is coming up strong and almost pulling even with Cory Booker in this race.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.